1392.5 WLXG Lexington, an LM Communications broadcasting station. The only no-filter sports show in Kentucky. It's the Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
Alan, I hate to say you're right, but when you're right, you're right. And this is something you're right about.
Well, I appear on a lot of radio shows, and I'll tell you, in all honesty, I enjoy being on your show more than any because we have such a good time and talk about a lot of great things.
Yeah, we tried to bust your chops, but you are a chop. Thank God you're not edible.
There's no such thing as an Alan Cutler humble opinion. Gonna be a softly spoken opinion. There's no
okay.
Hello, Mark. Mr. Pope, 1996.
Oh my gosh! What? Hey, let's give it up right here. This is my guy. Yes, I'm so happy to see you.
Hey, gratitude is a skill, guys. That if you practice, will give you a joyful life regardless of your circumstances.
The talking point, as you know, the past couple weeks is about the disciplined execution, about really focusing and doing things. And our guys want to play hard. They're always, you know, inspired to play on Saturday. It's about how detailed we are and how we execute in critical moments. Just the way we're built, we're going to be in a lot of close games. And so we have to make sure we stick to that plan and follow it and do the very best we can in critical moments. As I tell them, you know, you could play 95% of a game extremely well and play 5% and lose that game. You see it all the time.
Hey, what? Brad Taylor needs to hear that soundbite, especially the one in the end where Stoops is saying, we're playing a lot of close games. Point spread, point spread, point spread. By the way, Brad will be joining us at about 1:40 this afternoon. Also joining us today, one of my all-time favorites, Tony Delk, in the Hall of Fame. Also joining us today, hustling young reporter. I can say young because I'm old. Cameron Drummond does a really nice job, and he's got a terrific future with the Lexington Herald Leader. Jimmy in control. I'm Alan Cutler, and I know we have people listening in Florida and all kinds of other places. So wherever you are, I hope you're safe. I hope your friends and family are safe. I hope your friends have power. It's raining pretty hard here in Lexington. That's no surprise. It's interesting how much it's gained in velocity in the last 5 hours, and hopefully it goes away before 5 o'clock, at least around here and everywhere else. And my thoughts and prayers for everyone. I can't imagine. Jimmy, I saw a picture. I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. There was a bridge, I think, in Tampa.
Yeah.
Some part in Florida, and they hadn't closed the damn thing. And I saw a live shot. And there were, I couldn't tell if it was three or four trucks or three or four cars, a combination of whatever it was. And they were going across it. And it scared the hell out of me for them.
Mm-hmm. It's scary down there. My hometown in Panama City got hit in 2018 by Hurricane Michael, the Category 5. And my hometown was the direct hit. That's exactly where it went through. And it was... I mean, there's still people 6 years later recovering from it. It is. It's bad. Whenever it hits, it hits.
Wait a second. 6 years later?
Yeah.
In your hometown growing up in Florida, they're still suffering and recovering?
Yeah. Now, when I say suffering, recovering, like there's still people, like you can still see, like trees are still snapped in half, obviously, but there's still apartment complexes that never got built back up. I mean, there's people that still haven't completely finished the renovations on their houses. I mean, it's,
wow.
You still see, I mean, used to be full of pine trees. And when you drive into the city, I mean, it's still, you can see as far as you want into the, you know, as you're driving. It's still weird. It's eerie when I still go back home.
Wow. By the way, John Clay put it in his column and he gave credit to Brad Taylor. So I'm giving credit to both. And truth is, I did not know. And I got to tell you, this really surprises me that in the last 12 SEC road games, and this is a Brad Taylor stat, Kentucky is 6-6 against the spread. That's pretty good. And they're 3-1 this year, all courtesy of Brad Taylor, who will be joining us later. Very interesting. So, Jimmy, I know you didn't play big-time college football, but you played college football, so I respect it. So that's not where I'm coming from. I'm going to guess on some of your road trips? You weren't eating high-quality steak. Was it peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you know, like a box lunch with an apple or something like that when you got on the bus?
Yeah, it's essentially all it was. That was whatever they could get from the school cafeteria is what they would get boxed up, and that's what we would get.
So there will be some Kentucky players that'll be eating steak tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. getting ready for the game.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a meat guy anymore. But even the days when I ate a lot of meat, I can't imagine eating steak 7 a.m. Can you?
Oh, I could. Get some nice steak and eggs would be good on a game day.
Okay, so you eat at 7 a.m. Let's say you have a big steak and eggs. Doesn't that bother you at noon? Or I guess you're young and nothing bothers you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. If I did that now, I couldn't do that now. Okay. But that's also the difference in when you're playing at 18, 19, 20, and once you get, you know, old like me in my 30s.
Shut up.
But just, yeah, seriously. I guess,
you know,
I mean,
I've never said shut up to you on the air, and guess what? I refuse to apologize.
That probably deserves a little bit more than a shut up, but I'll take that. But I mean, there's guys that probably eat full bowls of fettuccine Alfredo pasta with chicken and then go out and play. I could not imagine doing that now, but
I don't know why I'm going here, but this show goes where it goes. I've always been amazed that more players, especially the big dudes, who can eat with a voracious appetite that's just ridiculous. I'm surprised more players don't throw up in the first quarter of games. I've always been amazed. And you can say, well, it's a couple hours before and stuff like that, but, you know, you've seen some guys who could really eat, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really eat.
Yeah.
And now you're hitting somebody and straining maybe 3 hours later. In this case, for Kentucky, it'll be about 5 hours later. They've stretched it out a little bit, or they're waking up at 7 or something, whatever the heck they're doing. But when is their pregame meal? Is it 8 or 7? I'm not sure. Shouldn't be tough to find out. It's not that big of a deal. The point is, if it's me, I would be eating fruit and stuff like that, something that you could have an empty stomach when you went to play. That's all. It doesn't matter. So, what would you do? And I've heard these stories before, to wake up your players. So look, they're teenagers, right? They like to stay up late. I stay up too late. That's neither here nor there. And these kids are not used to going to bed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
10 o'clock. They got a 7 a.m. wake up call. Whether it's a boombox or pounding on the doors or whatever heck it is, have no fear, clip number 3. Have no fear. Have none at all. It won't be Mark Stoops doing the waking up. He's got 9 million people on his staff. They will wake these kids up and wake them up. It's not like, I'm rolling over and go back to sleep for half an hour. That's not what football's all about. He will wake them up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll wake them up. We're going to make sure they're awake. Yeah. We'll get them going. And, you know, I've been harping on it all week, you know, with getting, you know, sacrificing, doing a little extra, trying to get a little extra sleep. And, you know, because that's an early morning.
Early morning. Yeah. Jackson Dart. And I have said this, even though they've played cupcakes and we went through the numbers, it's ridiculous how the number one in the country and this, that, all these stats, but they played nobody. In spite of that, I still think he's best quarterback in the league, and time will tell that I could easily be wrong. There's, you know, 3, 4, 5 potential candidates, depending upon who you like and stuff like that. And some people might put in young Manning in there if he gets to play enough, if the Studley guy can't come back. We'll see. But the point is, I think he's amazing. And you have to wonder, and it's fair. For example, suppose Bush Hamden is here 4 years from now, which I highly doubt. I just do. But suppose he's here 4 years ago. And by the way, there's not a suggestion that Stoops is pushing him out the door or anything like that. My sense is he'll become a head coach. That's my guess. I have no idea. Just what you feel. But just imagine if Bush Hamden is here 4 years from now, Jimmy, and Cutter Bowley has been the starting quarterback for a couple of years and has had the same guy working with him with all that time. If it's the right guy, that you're working with, it's worth its weight in gold. Did you ever go through something where you changed coordinators 2-3 times in 3 years?
No. No, I didn't. I didn't play in college long enough to go through that. But no, and when I was, you know, when I was in high school, we had the same coach. He had been there for 35 years. But I can't imagine that's an easy transition to go through. That's got to, in an already very complex, complicated game, especially when you're quarterback, that all the knowledge you have to then throw it all away, dump it away, dump away all the verbiage, everything you knew, the signals, and start over. Like, that can't be good. And then you do it again. And then the next year you do it again. That's got to be hard.
Well, I think it's the most underplayed story for this football team. It's been said, this is not breaking news, duh. And we mentioned yesterday, Kinzie Lee did an interview with Dean Key for BBN, and he admitted that it was frustrating. What else can you say?
Yeah.
Then he had a positive spin, Dean Key, say, look, I've learned from 3 different guys, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, you're talking about coming out of an interview with a positive spin, and it was the question was asked properly, and it should be asked more. I can't imagine. You're playing the first or second game, and you've had this new system since spring and stuff like that, but now the bullets are flying, and things are going fast, and you're going around, and you got to make a decision, and all of a sudden, when you think you're really fast, you get confused because the numbers you memorized last year, what was called, it could make you pause. Pausing in sports is awful. So, to Jackson Dart, as much as I like him, he's had the same coordinator for years, some guy named Kiffin, and look, Stoops admits the obvious. And I think it's been one of the downfalls of the Stoops administration here. And by the way, what Mark has done is great. But the downfall has to be the rapid changing of coordinators year after year after year after year. It's a bad deal. It really is. And they're overcoming it. And I have wondered if it's cost them maybe a number of wins if they had the right person for a number of years. Look, nobody expects a coordinator on this level to stay 20 years. That's just not the real world. Money, jobs, you know, you're really good. Somebody else wants you, they'll pay you more. So nobody expects that. But the adjustment that these kids have had to go through is ridiculous. So Dart has a tremendous advantage. And this is clip number one, Jimmy, talking about you got the same coordinator. You got the same boss.
I definitely think it's important, the continuity with coordinators. Continuity with you know, the quarterback and the system, you know, definitely is, it's very important. And so you can see the growth that he's made. He's always been a very good player. It's always been a very good system, but it's just another level right now.
It is another level, and I'm going to be fascinated to see if the defensive line can get to him at all or rush him a little bit, because I don't give a crap about those numbers. I said the same thing when Kentucky was going to play South Carolina the week of. Game before means nothing. And South Carolina barely won against a cupcake. And look what they did at Kentucky. Well, guess what? All these great numbers that Ole Miss has, maybe that continues tomorrow. I'm going to bet it doesn't. I'm going to bet it doesn't. I think Kentucky's defense is that good. And I think they've got some confidence now, some real confidence. And so I'm really excited to see what Kentucky can do. I'm really excited. I want to jump around a couple of things. We'll go back to UK football. Tony Delk joining us at 12:30, 1 o'clock. Cameron Drummond, 1:40. It will be the one, the only, Brad Taylor. You see Wandell Robinson's numbers, by the way?
I did.
Ooh.
He's a big part of that offense.
Yeah, and let me tell you what ticks me off about the Giants. Okay, there's a lot of things that tick me off about the Giants. You understand. I'm going to throw a name at you. He's one of the greatest players of his era, Andy Robustelli. If you've heard of him, I'll be shocked.
No, I've heard of
him. Okay.
Tony Baselli, similar name, not same player. No. I don't know why I went to Tony Baselli, but no, never heard of him.
Well, so you're talking about two great Italian players. That's what they have in common, and they both were linemen. Anyway, this goes back to the 50s, late 50s and 60s. I mean, I go back that far with the Giants. They've pigeonholed Wandell Robinson. They've pigeonholed him. I'm kind of glad they've pigeonholed him for one reason, and then I think it stinks for another reason. They targeted him 14 times. Jimmy, I didn't look this up, but if you can do a Google real quick, I wonder if there's a receiver in the National Football League this year that has been targeted 14 times. Could it be? Yes. I would bet you anything. There aren't five receivers this year. I'm not saying in the history of the NFL or last year or something like that I would bet strongly there haven't been five receivers this year, because it's such a small part of the season so far, that have been targeted 14 times. 14 times. And he runs great routes, and he makes you miss. And by the way, he had 11 catches. Not only have 11 catches, are you ready for this? The kid from Kentucky, the former second-round draft choice, is on pace, Jimmy, for 111 catches this year. 111. Now, he gets 100. Everybody knows this. He's a star. His name blows up. But here's the thing that bothers me about the Giants. They have pigeonholed him to just be a possession guy. I'm not saying I'd have him run 50 yards downfield, because they got neighbors now, and this kid from LSU is just absolutely spectacular. Spectacular. But I think partly because he's shifty, partly because he's got good hands, partly because he's smart and reads zones, Jimmy, I think he can get some 12, 14, 18, 25 yards downfield when they're playing a zone defense, because he's really smart and he'll run to his spot and he knows what the hell he's doing. And I hope for his sake, first of all, I'm ecstatic he got 14. Ecstatic, because that means they love the guy. And obviously Jones really trusts him. And I thought Jones played a really good game last night. But the point is, they trust him. I think there's more in the tank for him. But I guess we shouldn't complain, because look at what's happening now. And he might have gotten this, you know, right off the bat when he got hurt and stuff like that. The Giants really like him. And I said this before, and this wasn't breaking news. If he was 6'2", he'd have been a first-round draft choice. High, by the way. I'm not talking about number one, but would he be in the lower part of the top 15? Oh, absolutely. He's listed at 5'8", but he's built like a brick, you know what.
Yeah.
And he's tougher mentally, as you know what. And he caught a million passes at Kentucky after he came here from Nebraska. I love him, but I think the Giants have pigeonholed him. You got a number for me? So he has been targeted last night 14 times. Has anybody else been targeted that many times?
So you've got his teammate, Malik Nabers, was targeted 18 times in week two. Same with Amon-Ra St. Brown in week two. And then Cooper Kupp in week one was targeted 21 times.
Oh, my gosh. Which is insane. The Cooper Kupp thing. That is insane.
There's a couple other guys that have been targeted 14 times in a game, but there's not five others besides those guys.
Okay, so I'm right with the 5-1 and got lucky. Blah, blah, blah. And the other thing is, he's about to become a star. And if the Giants would win some games, it would be amplified. They had everything going for them to win that game last night. They just did, and they did not. But I wanted to push him, because I got to tell you what, I was tickled pink. Tickled pink. I was so happy for him. Because he's really that good mentally and physically. He's probably got body fat of about 3%, just like his dad. I mean, crazy. Now, we don't talk Steelers here. Usually no reason to. But there's something going on, and this is typical of Mike Tomlin, okay? And I say this even though I've told the story, whatever, he turned me down for an interview at Rupp Arena. And one of the things about me is I didn't think more or less of him because of that. What did he say? What was the thing? It was the best rejection I've ever had. Something about, I appreciate the opportunity and I respectfully decline. Something along those lines. It was so good. It was scary. Neither here nor there. So fans being fans. Fields or Wilson? Fields or Wilson? Fields or Wilson? And Wilson's been hurt. And he's obviously not 100%. But the media and fans, and I know talk shows in Pittsburgh because I did it for years, sports talk in Pittsburgh, as well as TV, and they're going nuts. You can just see they want to know, name Fields the starting quarterback. Why should we? By the way, he's playing really good, and he's actually playing better than he was in Chicago. And one of the reasons, I think the offensive line is a little better, and one of the reasons, he's got a good coordinator. Arthur Smith is a really good coordinator. And I'm telling you, I thought Chicago was stupid to let him go. That's me. I said it then. I say it now. I think his future is ahead of him. He's not a running quarterback, but it's an option. And when he does, it's spectacular. Really is. But he's going, hey, there's no need to make a decision now. And I'll make it when I need to make it. And I think Mike Tomlin probably has as much trust as any coach in a National Football League. I would say Mike Tomlin in the last 20 years, I'm not saying he's the best coach in the National Football League the last 20 years, because I think until the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, how do you not say Belichick? Neither here nor there. Not saying in the history of the NFL, I'm talking about the last 20 years. Point is this. I think everyone trusts Mike Tomlin. I don't think he lies. I don't think he's baloney. You know, and I've said this about Harbaugh. And I think I mentioned Tomlin in that rant. Jimmy, I don't remember, but Harbaugh would be a really, talking about the Baltimore's Harbaugh, would be a really, really, really good politician. And you say, coaches, it's sports. No, it's decision-making. Rapidly. Being fair and honest and judging. I think Mike Tomlin would be a great senator. And by the way, this I wouldn't have a clue if he's Democrat or Republican. And here's the thing. I wouldn't care. I would vote for him if he was Democrat or Republican. I like people. Party to me is secondary than people. Give me good people. There's good people on every single aisle. And there's assholes on every side of the aisle. There just is. Did you just have to hit a button?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Sorry about that. Just, I'm passionate about this. You know, it's funny because we're doing Zoom. The smile, on, Jimmy has a funny smile. The smile on his face, like, really? Really?
I had to think about it. Like, it's on the edge. I'll do it anyways.
Hey, let's put it this way. You're being safe. It's your call. It's your decision. And it's your fanny. So, you know, that's, I acquiesce to you on that. But I think Mike Tomlin is a great human being. By the way, there was a feature on him a year or two ago about all the work he's doing in Africa helping people out. I don't know if you saw it, Jimmy. It was beautiful. It just beautiful. Kids and caring and stuff like that. So he's taking a lot of garbage about this. Make a decision. Why? Why? And he's not even hinting at anything. Why? And he's really good about not enabling you and not allowing you to do what?
Read
between the lines. Oh, you can't pressure Mike Tomlin. See, that's another reason why I think he'd be a great politician. Can you see all these people with money coming up to him and say, well, you know, if you do this, I'll give you this. I can see him going, no.
Yeah.
Or would you do this? Well, is it the right thing to do? See, I think we have a lot of great people who could be politicians. And you know what? The crazy part is I think a lot of them are in sports.
I was just going to say, you know how much different the government would run if we just had a lot of football coaches in different positions? Again, we don't need to get down that rabbit hole, but I just, the way that locker rooms work and the way that they can handle personalities and divas and people from all different backgrounds, bring them together with a common goal, which is kind of what the country is.
Yes. Why limit yourself to football? There's a guy in Golden State named Kerr, who I think would be great.
Yeah.
There's a guy in San Antonio named Popovich, I think would be great. You know, on a quiet day or some night when I'm watching sports when I shouldn't be late at night, I need to make a list of coaches, baseball, basketball, football, college. Seriously. You remember there was some talk, this is before your time, about maybe Cal going into politics? By the way, there was nothing to it, but, you know, he's the king of Kentucky. He could run for governor and he could win and stuff like that. And by the way, I think there was a point in time that if he ran for senator, McConnell might have been in trouble. Maybe not. Maybe not. McConnell's got too much money. Neither here nor there. It's 12:23, and we have Tony Delk at 12:30, and I want to do this, and this has nothing to do with John Calipari. Well, it does, but it really doesn't. Nolan Richardson is one of my favorite coaches of all time. When you have overcome what he had to overcome just to get into coaching and get a junior college job at a place that really nobody wanted. And I wonder what he made, by the way. I need to get him on the air, and I have his number, and I'm going to do it. And I was going to do it last year, and I didn't. So, you know what? Jimmy, shame on me. Shame on me. I think he's a great man. I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time in any sport. And to deal with the racism and abuse that he did to move up the ladder the way he did and the way he is for people, black or white, it doesn't matter. I think it's off the charts. And I'm not going to retell the story about how he got fired in Arkansas and how my great photographer, Greg Gorm, who works for UK, had a lot to do with him getting fired, which is the truth because he just had video of the conversation between he and Tubby. And it was really inflamed before the video, but a conversation that Nolan had with Tubby and what he said cost him his job. You should never say those kinds of things in public, neither here nor there. And I thought it was wrong. I thought the Arkansas people and Nolan should have figured it out, and he still should have remained the coach. Cooler heads prevailed, but that's not important. What has happened is, and Cal is really good at this. He's really good. He's a gatherer of people. And so he had Nolan come talk in practice. Now, Jimmy, I know you got it cued, but there's two things about this I suggest you listen to. Partly the words and partly the strength and passion and ferocity that Nolan Richardson, at his age, still has for basketball and helping people out. It's about becoming a better basketball player. It's got everything to do with how you handle yourself and your work ethic to be successful in life, but on the basketball court first. So Cal had Nolan talk to his Arkansas team.
Hey, guys, I'm glad to be able to at least come into the gym. I haven't been around the gym as much as I would have liked to be. But knowing Coach Cal and what he's done at the University of Kentucky, UMass, matter of fact, one night he beat us so bad that I didn't think I was going to go to sleep that night. I prayed for the plane to fall out the air. That's how I look. You know, that's wanting to do it. The thing that I've heard so much about this group that impresses me the most is how hard you play. That's the biggest keys to anything that we do in our lives, as far as I'm concerned. It's how hard we're going to do it. And if you got the kind of guy, the kind of coach that you're paying attention to, then you got a chance to be very, very successful. Now, what is success? Success is going where you hope, or going where you have started working toward going. Now, some of you will play more than others, but everybody on the team is for one. One is for all is for one. That's what we call team ball. You have the opportunity to do something very different here. Yes, the University of Arkansas have won a national championship, only one. The state of Arkansas only have three schools in its state of major division one. So you have something to prove as a team member or as an individual. Now, I want to say this, that there's those who play to win, and there's those who play to play. Which one are you? You're either going to play to win, or you're just playing because you got the jersey on and Coach Cal invited you to play. I don't want to be that guy. There's no substitute for conditioning. None! There's no substitute for conditioning. There's no substitute for strength. You've got good strength coach. You can't substitute it. You can't put something in its place. It's got to be done. Then you got to believe, and then you work hard. I know Coach Cal would do that for you. The key is, do I have enough intelligence to pay attention? Because some of us hear what we're saying, and some of us are listening to what we're saying. You pay attention. He'll get you there. We'll all be happy. Be the best that you can be. That's all I'm saying. Work as hard as you can work every day. Every day. There are no days off in this game. When you cross that line, you should say to yourself, I come to work. This is my job. This is what I do. This is where I'm going to lay my hat. This is it. When I get across that line coming back, then I can be what I want to be there. Cross this line, cross to the court, ready to play. Hey, we're going to do it every day, as hard as we can. And I'll be hopefully having an opportunity to watch you guys play, because something tells me we got something beautiful in the air, and it's not Coach Cal.
That's right.
All righty. Thank you very much, guys.
Coach, thank you.
That's great. He is 82 years old. Jimmy, does he sound 82?
No, I had to look up how old he was after about a minute of that, because I knew he was older, but I was at 82. He's still got that in him. I mean, that got me fired up. Not many 82-year-olds can give a speech like that and be passionate and from the heart and get you fired up and going.
Here's a mistake Cal's making. Have you noticed I've pointed out a couple things which I think I could help him improve?
A few.
Yeah. I would have, I'm not sure where Nolan lives. I used to know, and I don't remember. The point is, he would be at as many practices as he wanted. And I'm not kidding you, Jimmy. I am not kidding you. I would have a limousine pick him up. I would have a limousine drive him home. He would have his own driver. Lunch or dinner would be obviously catered. It's not the money. It's how you take care of people. He would be around the program as much as he wanted to. And if I'm Cal, I'd have private conversations. That's me, 82 years old. God bless him. By the way, do me a favor, Jimmy. Save that when Kentucky plays Arkansas. We're going to play it that week. Hopefully Tony Duck is next. Then hopefully it's Cameron Drummond at 1 o'clock. Then hopefully Brad Taylor about 1:40 talking about gambling. Got a lot of good stuff going on. Jimmy, did that get you fired up?
It did.
With scale of 1 to 10, what'd you give it? I'm going to write my number down. Hang on. I got mine. What do you have?
I'm going to give it an 8.
I gave it a 9.5.
Mm.
You have no respect for older people.
I think an 8's pretty good.
No, it stinks. He's 82 years old, and he's got the – and by the way, did you notice – I know we're late for a break. Did you notice it wasn't about basketball? It was about success.
Yeah.
Did you notice it was all about using your intelligence to pay attention? And if people pay attention, if your IQ is blank or blank, unless it's really bad or really, really, really good, if you're somewhere in the middle, if you pay attention, you can be successful. He talked about success. And you get the habits of success on the basketball court, you can transform that to other parts of your life. And you're still giving it an 8?
I'll give it an 8.3.
No, I don't want to change your mind. No.
I did like the line about hearing and listening. I love that line about, yes, you're hearing things, but are you listening to things?
Okay, Tony Delk, is he in? He just sent me a text.
Yes, he
if
is.
He can. All right, once you get him on, we'll take the break afterwards. So you need about 10 seconds?
Yeah, he is coming through now.
I wish Tony heard that, because Tony would agree with me 100%, and I bet Tony would have given that a 9.5. I'm giving that a 9.5. As a matter of fact, if Tony wants it, if he didn't catch it, I'll send it to him. Tony Delk, how are you? I am so fired up. I don't know if you heard what just happened. If not, I'll send it to you if you want. Nolan Richardson gave a pitch to the Arkansas kids, and it was absolutely spectacular. Spectacular. My respect for Nolan Richardson has always been off the charts. Hello, Hall of Famer. How are you, Tony Delk?
Oh, how you doing? Everything good?
Tony, did you hear a word of what I just said, or
Come on now. You know, you talk about Nolan Richardson. I almost made that commitment to go to Arkansas. So, of course, huge fan of Coach Richardson.
Well, if you didn't hear that rant, I will send it to you. He just did it.
Okay, please do.
Oh my gosh, please, Tony. You know, what people don't get, and I have this thing about the great coaches would be great politicians because they can make decisions. They don't give a crap about the crap, right? They understand life, right? Nolan Richardson, everything he went through with the abuse and racism, he got a job at junior college. Nobody wanted that damn job. Right. And then guess what? Tulsa was desperate. They were desperate. So he gets the Tulsa job. Right. They were desperate.
Yes.
And I don't know how else to say this. If you would have told me when he was in junior college that Arkansas would hire an African-American to be their head coach, you know what I told you at the time? Take a drug test. No, it's not happening. And then the job he did there was just absolutely off the charts. And so this rant, you'll hear it later. I'm going to send it to you. This rant.
Yeah, please do.
It had nothing to do with basketball. It was all about basketball. It was nothing. It had to do about success. It had success as a person. It was about habits. And Jimmy had to look up how old he was because right now he's soft-spoken, okay, because he's done a lot of yelling in his life. But there was a ferocity and passion in his voice. If Cal was smart, and I already said this, I would have a limousine with a driver at his house every day that he wanted to come practice.
Just, does he still live in Arkansas?
Yeah, yeah. And I can't remember how close he is to the university. I used to know and I forgot. Oh, yeah, he settled
there.
I'm sure
Cal is going to have him around just like he had Coach Hall around. Any former coach that's in the city, we know Coach will have a connection with them. And Coach is really great about bringing former players back. So I'm excited about where he's at and what he's doing. It makes a huge difference.
Let's put it this way. If he has Nolan around as much as he had Joby around, to me, that would be a beautiful thing. And he changed Joby's life. And I always give Cal credit for that. Changed his life. And because a lot of people like Joby, duh, but I really like Joby. He was really good. We had one argument. Well, I mean, it was toe-to-toe. I put a story on ESPN about why they weren't playing Louisville. This is before it happened. And I went to go talk to Denny Crum. I had just gotten here. We're talking early 80s. Nobody's really talking about this, right? Walked into a media day in Louisville. Now it's a huge thing. I went up to Kenny Klein. I said, can I talk to Coach? Yeah, he's up there. Just go up to him. Can you imagine a media day going up to say, can I talk to John Calipari or Coach Pacino? Yeah, not in a million years. I walk up to Denny Crum and I introduce myself. I swear to you, he goes, are you lost? And I put the story on TV and he challenged Kentucky and went on his, and Joe B was mad at me, but he was mad. He went after me and afterwards we shook hands and once it was over, it was over. Anyway,
wow.
Joe B and I were great. Joe B was great with everybody.
He was the times I met him, I sat down and talked to him. Actually, before Perkins closed, he would always have breakfast with two or three of his friends. So it was fun, exciting to have him around the program, and just how he was connected, how Coach brought him back, and how he felt part of the family, you know, the younger family. You know, it's different when you've won a championship in 78 and there's a disconnect. But Cal is really great at connecting the dots. You know, he knows how to bring back the generational players, players that, you know, probably was in the 70s, 80s. You know, it's still a family, still a fraternity, regardless of what decade, you know, guy played in. You know, we all love basketball.
The Joe B that you met and the Joe B, the coach, were two different people.
Well, we all are. I mean, you know, we go through, think about this, AC. We all go through different phases of our lives where we're not the same person we were like in our 20s. I'm 50 now. I'm sure not the person I was in my 20s or even probably 10 years ago. You know, we all go through decades of changes. You know, I don't think anyone remains the same, from friendships that you might have had as a kid, elementary to college, to you have your coworkers now that are, you know, probably better friends because you spend more time with them. So the changes are inevitable when you think about just where people's lives are at. It's like we all going to go through them. It's like having kids. You know, our kids will remain the same. You know, we remember them as babies, and now they're grown-ups. It's like, oh, my God, you know, my kid is doing this, this, this. But they take on the personality, some of the personality, some of the traits of their parents.
I wonder what vitamin pills you're taking, dude. You don't look 50. You look like what's that?
So, you know what? I try to eat as healthy as I can, although my downfall has been sweets, but that keeps me working out. That's the important thing. Getting some running in, which I'll probably do a little bit later today. And I'm getting ready for my showcase for high school kids tomorrow. We have about 20 kids that that will be participating in my AAU showcase tomorrow. So I'm excited about the event.
But tell everybody about that. I didn't know that, and maybe somebody who would be good enough to show up to your place next time or something like that, because instruction from you is very valuable.
Right, so our plan is by next year is to have a sanctioned event through the NCAA so our coaches can come out and watch. This is the seventh year of me having a basketball academy, and we had probably about 40 kids that came out, and we selected 20 kids from the greater Atlanta area. We have one kid coming up from Lexington, my really good friend, and one of my brothers, Antoine Spielman, coming up with his son. They're driving from Lexington. I have a kid coming from Tennessee, close by my hometown. And we were having a kid that was coming from IMG. I think it's, I want to say, Braden, Florida. He was going to come up, but the weather was bad yesterday. So I talked to him. I didn't get a chance to speak with his dad, but communicated with them. We'll have another event. So, you know, we're going to have about 20 kids, and we would have had kids traveling from three different states to participate in this event.
All right, tell me about going into the Hall of Fame, what that meant to you.
Wow. You know, it's when I look at getting jersey retired, going into different Hall of Fames, you know, and just being a person that I am and just where I came from, you know, all the hard work I put in, all the countless hours and with my brothers, Leslie, Ricklin, David, Dan, and mostly Leslie, who I spent a lot of time with, really good friend, Kendall Dancy, who when I made it, you know, he was that friend in the summertime. I would play basketball with him. He just kept helping me work on my game. And when I think about going into the Hall of Fame, it's so funny because when I was thinking about leaving at the time and having that conversation with Billy Donovan talking to me to stay, and I'm like, Billy, I'm watching everybody around the country play that I felt like I was better than, and I'm seeing these guys get, you know, significant minutes as a freshman. I was just trying to figure out, like, you know, what was the plan? And as an 18-year-old kid, you don't know the plan. You want to, you know, when you go from playing AAU, starting your high school, starting 3 years, is it was the first time in my career over the last 4 or 5 years I hadn't started. So that was the tough part of going and coming. And then just seeing how the end results, how it turned out. Like, you never know. Like, what if I had left? Who knows where I would have went, where I would have ended up. But I made the right decision.
You know, it is amazing how many big-time basketball players like yourself through the years that we have heard of, and then there's all kinds of things that we just don't find out. And that's okay. That's, you know, you'd like to have every story, but that's not the real world. That so many people that were on your level of talent as a freshman who didn't get to play when you were this huge star. You averaged 40-something in high school, didn't you? Or have I lost my mind?
37 and 38 respectively.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, senior year. I'm sorry for giving you too much love there, Tony. I apologize. I won't do it for the rest of the conversation.
I appreciate it.
But it's got to be impossibly tough to score high 30s per game and all of a sudden you're coming off the bench. I don't care how good you are of a person. I don't care. You're told you this, that, the other, this, that, the other, and you're going, hey, put me in, coach. I'm better than this guy. The frustration has to be ridiculous. And I have said this for decades and decades. People do not know. It's not just the Kentucky. How many, when I say kids, I mean, you know, you've been a grown up for a long time. But when you're 17, to me, I still call them kids. But how many kids at the time think about leaving? It's so much more than people have any idea.
Right. I think a lot of it is, AC, is really now you're questioning your talent. You're questioning, did I make the right decision? Is this the right program? Is this the right culture for me? Like, there were so many question marks that I had in my head at the time. And I'm just like, man, you know, I'm watching Roger Rose that was getting a lot of playing time. Jared was in the rotation. Like, everybody was in the rotation early except myself. So, of course, I'm coming in every day working hard. Like, it wasn't a day that I, you know, if you were to talk to Coach P and say, it wasn't a day as a Wildcat that I ever took off. Like, every day I came in prepared, ready to play, sick, staying out late, maybe coming in, knowing, okay, man, you know, I wasn't drinking or smoking at no point in time in my career or my life right now. But it was just that I'm playing, I'm working hard. I'm like, man, I'm not reaping the benefits of my hard work. You know, it's like this labor that I'm putting in, but there's no reward behind it. And I don't care how old you are, especially with an 18-year-old kid coming from a small town, you have to consider, what if I'd have stayed close to home? Would I have gotten more love? But like I said, it worked out.
And people love you in Lexington, and you're revered here. And you get, look at that smile, man. You got a great smile.
Appreciate it, man.
You do. It's like, okay, I've aged. Pretty tough to tell, right? You haven't. It's all good. It's all good.
No, okay. If you cut the gray, you haven't aged that much.
Oh, well, you know what? Don't get your eyes checked. Obviously, as young as you look, your eyes, obviously, you don't have 20/20. So when
I don't
you find
more.
When you find out you go in the Hall of Fame, was it a goofy reaction? Was it an out-of-body reaction? Did you expect it? Did you not expect it? And then, you know, when you calm down and you start looking at the list of your peers, it's a pretty impressive Hall of Fame. There's a lot of great people in there.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you can get a chance to walk around Freedom Hall and see the Muhammad Ali's, you know, that have gone in, you know, and Kenny Walker. I mean, there's just so many great players that have come through the state of Kentucky that have been blessed up on that wall, and I'm just one of them. And, you know, it don't really – it doesn't hit you until you walk into the building and you actually start seeing the people on the wall, and you'd be like, wow, I'm amongst greatness. And it's something that – it's a game that I played as a kid. I never knew the outcome was going to be me getting a jersey retired, me winning a national championship, me getting drafted into the NBA, me going into the Tennessee and Kentucky Hall of Fame. I'm just like – you know, that means I have done something well, but, you know, just have higher power that I believe in. God has definitely guided me in the right direction. He's allowed me to make mistakes, learn from them, and, you know, and most importantly, help people out along the way. I mean, that's the most important thing I can give back is my knowledge to the game of young youth that that I enjoy doing, you know, enjoy seeing the young youth every day that come to my program. And I can talk to them about my trials and tribulation, being a young kid, not knowing what the future is going to hold. But what I did know, I love something. When you love something, you're passionate about it, you have a chance to be successful. And I don't think a lot of people understand it. Or here's the thing, AC, what if I'd have given up and transferred somewhere else? You know, it's like sometimes you're closer than you think. And that's where I was with Coach Pitino. I was closer than I thought. You know, and he knew it. You know, he had a plan for me from day one that I didn't see as a 18-year-old kid. I'm so happy, so happy I stuck with the plan.
Was it easy or tough to trust him when you're frustrated? Because that's not an easy deal.
No, it's not. It's not. Well, you know what? It's not when someone has walked into your household and has told your parents that you're going to get a lot of significant playing time and you're not getting it. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, well, what's going on? You know, did we choose the wrong school? What is Tony doing wrong? You know, what do I have to do? What do I have to correct? You know, so like I said, there's a lot of question marks, man. It's tough just to watch not only your peers around the country play, but the guys who, when we came in 1992, we had the best recruiting class. You know, it wasn't like, you know, we was like number five. We were like the number one recruiting class. So with that being said, all your players are, you know, supposed to get minutes, you know, but when I'm getting DNPs, I'm not playing. I'm just like, hold on now. Well, what part of this story that I missed out on when he walked into my house and talked to my parents? And that's the hardest part. You know, it's not the, you know, where I finished, but it was like how I started. I don't know. You know, it's hard to recruit players in today's game. If you got a five-star player in high school, do you think he's going to come? Absolutely not.
You know, when I saw the release that you're going in the Hall of Fame, the first thing I thought of, and this is what comes up with you a lot, falling out of bounds. I'm in the second row. I'm in the second row across court, falling out of bounds, making that three. And I'm telling
right.
you, at that moment, I said, I'm not kidding you. And you probably think this is stupid, but that's me. Ball game.
it was a big shot at the right time. You know, Syracuse was making a run, and you know what's so funny? It was the only three that I made in the second half, which, you know, had a great first half shooting threes. And you have to give Bayhan and their players a lot of I would say smart, or, you know, make an adjustment, understanding, you know, the time of the game and paying more attention to me. And that's the hardest thing, that, you know, make an adjustment. That's the word I'm looking for. A lot of times it's hard to make adjustment and get guys to understand the importance of seeing what's going on the court. And it's not always the coach. Sometimes players are smart enough to be like, hey, that guy made six threes the first half. We might want to stay at home or stay closer to him, to make it tougher for when the ball rotates to him to get that shot off. So to make that three at that time was great. You know, I just – like I said, I did it was a great acting job. I don't really think he really fouled me. It was more about he was running, couldn't stop. I fell down and sold it to the referees.
Well, you know, it would have been apropos if you got a Tony, right? The acting awards.
that's what it was. And it was so funny because it's almost like he ran right next to me. Because normally when you think about someone shooting a three, you're never going to run through the center of their body. You know, we're taught to run to the side where they're shooting the ball at. And that's what I've done many times. And, you know, and I've seen guys fall knowing I haven't touched them, but it was a play close to our bench. And the referees, you had one that probably was watching the shot. One was watching the play as the guy was running towards me. And then as I fell down, I sold it, you know, and it was a big play at the right time of the game. But, you know, and you've seen many national championship games. It's not the best team doesn't always win, you know, and as we played that game, I thought it was a horrible game we played. We missed so many shots. We turned the ball over. We were just not clicking like we had been doing so many games that year. But we still was able to win because of our defense. But, you know, it wasn't one of the best games. You know, it's funny, we had our 20th reunion with Coach Pitino in Miami. And we watched the game. And I'm looking, I'm like, all the mistakes, all the missed shots, you know. And I'm like, how did we win that game? Because it wasn't one of our best games.
Well, you guys were tired. It was emotional. Boeheim's a hell of a coach. His crazy defense drives a lot of people nuts. And as you know, Boeheim married a girl from Lexington.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Whose brother, I'm terrible with names, Tony. I used to be great at names. I'm really bad now. But her brother has sung the national anthem before at least a couple of games at, I think, before and after they got married.
Oh, wow.
Little tidbit, whatever. So how many people come up to you and remember that shot, clutch shot, in the national championship game? Do you get much of that, or now has time passed so much that?
I think time has passed. I think it's more. It's funny, too, because when I come across people across the country, it's almost like I didn't have an NBA career. You know, it's like, oh, man, I remember you from Kentucky. Everybody's like, oh, Kentucky. You know, it's not even a championship game. It was that we had so many televised games, and being one of the top teams in the country, you know, doing pretty much my whole time there, you know. So the kids or the parents, you know, remember the success I had at Kentucky, but just how hard I played, you know, my game, you know, me being a shooter, me playing tough on the court, you know. So when I run into people, come across people, we have conversation, you know, it's always about, man, I love your game. I love what you did at Kentucky, you know. So Kentucky was, as I stated earlier, you know, I don't know what would have happened if I'd have left. Like, who would have, if I'd have went to another school, maybe, what if I'd have gone to Tennessee Vanderbilt? Would I be as well known as I am? Probably not. You know,
nope.
I think Kentucky is a brand within itself. It's a story program that when you think about college basketball, national championship, great coaches, you know, you're going to put, Kentucky's going to be in the top three, if not number one. Number one in my eyes, because, of course, I'm going to be a little biased. But, yeah, you know, you got to put us in the top three when you look at college programs when it comes to basketball.
Tony Dell, kind enough to join us for maybe a couple more minutes, and let's play a silly game of what if, okay? If you were 17 years old now, even though you played for Pitino, who wanted you to shoot threes, but, you know, Steph Curry's changed the world.
Yeah. They
are rangeless. I was always told that you were doing stuff like that before practice, that
yes.
You could shoot 30, 35, 38 feet. You know, it's funny. We're on Zoom now, and Tony, of course, knows where I'm going. That's not the point. Tony's already smiling. He's already smiling. I'm seriously trying to picture you playing today and then going into the NBA. And you had a wonderful career in the NBA, but.
Yeah, it was cool. Could have been better, you know.
Yeah, but you had a wonderful career in the NBA, but with the freedom of shooting from 30, 35 feet when guys aren't guarding you, your NBA career would have been totally different, in my very humble opinion. And
it would have been. You know what? Because here's the thing, AC. First of all, I probably would have stayed in college only 1 year. Let's start there. I probably would have made a lot more money, you know, with the freedom, the range, my game, how hard I play. So I reflect on, you know, the good things. And as I watch today's game, what if I did have the freedom that I once had when I was in high school, being able to shoot the ball whenever, you know, just being an AI of whatever team I played on, you know, yeah, it would have been totally different, you know. But I enjoyed my career. The only thing I did enjoy was, you know, being traded as many times or going to different teams. And I had a contract at the time that was easy to move. As one of my friends say, I had a sweet contract that you can throw in on any deal to make it work.
I never looked at it that way, but that was true, and that's probably why you were traded certain times. I'm going to make you sick. I know you've thought about this. If you were playing Kentucky this year, you would end up making – you ready for this? And you know this. You know that? This. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars playing basketball. Yeah. And as much fun as you had, you would have had more fun.
Yes, I would have. Yeah, you know, it's especially with it being a positionless game and not having to be labeled a point guard, a shooting guard, just being a guard, you know, and one that could get buckets. Like when I look at like a Fred VanVleet, you know, guys that probably going to make $200 or $300 million playing just basketball, good players, you know.
Three plus. He's already three plus. Before, yes. When his contract runs out,
yeah,
and he's a hell of a player. You're a much better player, and he's a hell of a player.
I like, you know, like I said, I had so much more to offer that I don't think coaches really tapped in with. Like, if Scott Skiles had stayed my coach, and you know, for a few years, especially free agent years, you know, where now I'm looking at these, you know, the salary cap is in hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, you do have to, you know, look at guys that I know and feel like I'm better than, you know, and I'm seeing these guys make $15, $20, $25 million. I'm like, really? But, you know, it's today's market. Can't really hate on what's happening right now. That means owners, we play for millionaire owners. These guys are playing for billionaires. You know, guys that during my time, I've been worth $100 million. You know, you got guys worth, you know, $50, $60, $70 billion. You know, it's the amount of money, the network money. It's an all time high, you know. So great for the guys now that they're able to make and capitalize. You know, even NIL money. I mean, you can NIL money starting out there. I probably would have been in the hundreds of thousands, if not in the millions, before we even got to the NBA. You know, so I would have had millions of dollars in my bank account before I even made millions.
Well, let's put it this way: within 10 years. And that's a long time because I think it's going to be less. LeBron's going to own an NBA team. There'll be a team up for sale, and they will make sure he becomes an owner.
Here's the thing. He's working towards that right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's going to put himself with some partners and with his group of guys, with Rich Paul, Mav, like he's going to have his group of guys, you know, involved in whatever decision he makes, you know, so they're going to be, you know, at some point in time, I start out as a minority owner, but he will be a majority owner like Michael Jordan was. Yep. You know, it was a gradual process to take over the Bobcats, which actually went back to being the Hornets. And he just slowly, when Bob Johnson bought the team, he had a plan for Michael that, you know, you're going to be the first former NBA player that's going to own a franchise. And Bob Johnson really made that happen, along with Michael, you know, having such a great brand, and his Air Jordan still selling at an all-time high. I can't even tell you how many pairs. I probably have a total of maybe 80 pairs myself. So
you have how many, you know, pairs?
That's the cash count. Oh, yeah, man. I love my shoes, man.
and some of you only probably worn once.
I have other brands, but I've always been a huge MJ fan as a kid. No, I think when he went to the league, and I remember having his first pair of Jordan, I was wearing them in high school, I think. I was like, man, you know what? The popularity is actually at an all-time high. You know, it was high then, but now you still see babies wearing Air Jordan. I mean, let you know that the brand, the name, live on.
Have you ever been to Nike, the campus?
Yeah, I've been there a few times. Yeah.
I figured, okay, because Shane Boyd, who I'm close with, took me around when we were out west because of family and friends and stuff like that. And the Michael Jordan, the you know, he's got his own building. Duh, it's Michael Jordan. There's a lot of places that have their own buildings, but it's
Is that Misty? Shane? I know Shane.
Shane's great. Yeah, Misty's husband because of what she's doing with Detroit and stuff like
that. Yes.
She's great people. She's one of the highest ranked female executives in the NBA, and she walks into it that way.
Yeah, she was. It's funny because when I met Misty a few years ago, we did an overseas tour, and I knew she was really great with people, and she was doing She'd been with Nike for a few years, and but just an exceptional person, you know, just from a standpoint of helping people, understanding people, and she's been really good. So I you know, to know that she was going to take that job when Trajan became the president, you know, it was a great hire, a great, not even like minority hire, just a great hire overall. Like you getting a complete package with her.
I kind of think we're past saying minority hire. And I hope that day'll come. When I was a kid in college, Frank Robinson was named manager of the Cleveland Indians. And I did this long commentary because he was the first. And I did a commentary about one of these days, nobody will talk about the colors of a man's skin when you get hired, that day will come. And I think in the NBA,
right?
I think that's now true. Perfect? No, it's never going to be perfect, but I actually think it's true, and maybe I'm naive and maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, Trajan Lang is one of the smartest guys, right? He runs an organization and he picked a young lady who's really, really, really smart and was a great basketball player and a great people person. I mean, has nothing to do with the color of her skin. So in sports has been.
But also, I'll tell you, the university helps too now. We can't forget that. Like when you hire someone, it's like, she's a great minority, a smart, intelligent woman, but she also went to Duke, you know. But even outside of that, like, you know, she still would have been a great hire. It doesn't matter.
Right.
The university. But it helps being, you know, having a connection, you know, because if one of us were in the position to hire, you know, we definitely look within first and see, okay, what person is qualified to take on this job responsibility? And having someone from your alma mater, you know, it's almost like, you know, when people make it, you know, who else do they bring along? You know, and you want to bring people who are close and understand the vision. And that's a game changer, you know, when you have a relationship with people. So that's the good part about relationships is like, who you know? Who do you know who's in position to hire you?
Well, that's the good old boys.
You might know a lot of people, but who can hire you that's a friend that's in the position to hire? It doesn't happen often. And when you have that connection, it helps out.
I'm actually surprised there aren't more African-American head football coaches. That's just me.
Yeah, maybe in the future. I just don't see them. I just don't see it happening that often. I mean, it like I said, it does, but it, more than likely, you know, it's university is going to choose a white coach for football and basketball. I will say NBA has changed that. You know, there are many black NBA head coaches, and you know, a lot of them are, you know, like I said, they're qualified. You know, there's nothing you can say where when you talking about check the boxes, they check all the boxes.
You know why I think it's changed in the NBA? See if you agree with this. Because there were a number of African-American head coaches in the NBA who were not big names when they got promoted. Some of the guys, a lot of the guys who been promoted didn't have your career as a basketball player, right? Didn't have your name that you had. They were longtime assistants who were really good, who paved the way. Right. And there are some guys, now you know who they are, obviously, you played the NBA forever, so Tony, you don't count. And I mean that with loving kindness. But there have been so many guys now who have been hired by the NBA who were not just big names.
Right.
They're getting hired because they're getting hired. And it's the only sport where I see that tremendously.
Yeah.
And I do believe in the trickle-down effect. And I get it that there's so many white owners in the NBA, but there's so many, you know, white owners in the NBA and NFL, whatever, but it's changed in the NBA. I think the NBA is way ahead of the other leagues in player management relations, in coaches and what they do, but that's me.
And also with just, you know, the gender hire, you know, you got to think about it's a league with all men, but they have given women power. So that's the, you know, it's the first of its kind to, you know, likes to have executive women make decisions, which to me, just as qualified, know the game, you know, just that they just happen to be women. That doesn't, you know, because I really enjoy just having a conversation with a Misty, you know, just on her journey, where she's at, and then just being a friend. You know, she's one of those people that I enjoy talking to with basketball, and I never think about, oh, she's a woman. you know, we speak the same language. Like that's what people fail to realize. You know, when you can speak the same language as someone, you know, despite the color, despite their, you know, their gender, is we have a love and a passion for something, as I spoke earlier. And it's a fraternity, whether it's a man or woman, it's a basketball fraternity. And we're still talking basketball at the end of the day, which we all love it. We understand it. And that's the connection that you're going to have with people. Do you know what I love and enjoy doing, and you love the same thing? Now we have conversation, and we find like we have a lot more in common than the average person that doesn't play or haven't played basketball.
Two more quick ones. By the way, Shane and I go back from when he was 10th grade at Henry Clay High. We've been close since
then. That's a long time, man.
He was, you know.
Decades.
Long time. Okay. Last one. And thank you for your time. It's good catching up. It's good seeing your face. I'm happy for your success. Surprised? Hell no.
Thank you.
Hell no. Not surprised. Just not surprised. With all the great things you've done, okay, when you got the call to go into the Hall of Fame, just what was your body? What was your emotions? What was your feelings at that moment? And then when you realized, wait a second. And as much as I respect you, Tony, please, you're going to take this the right way. You're on a list with Muhammad Ali.
Yes, man. Hey, you know what? It's funny, too, you say that, because I have this one picture that my financial guy, a good friend of mine, Rick Abar, has at his house. And it's me when Muhammad Ali came to one of our games. And before I get ready, you know, as they call my name, get ready to go out on the court, I kind of touch greatness. You know what I'm saying? Like let me touch greatness before I take this court. And I have that. I haven't gotten that picture because Rick Abar refused to give me that picture. So one day he's going to give me the picture. But when I got
the copy,
I got to get a copy.
Rick Abar, if you're listening, shame on you. Make a copy. My mouth is going open because I remember you doing that.
Yes. And he could make a copy, but didn't even know when I got the call. It was you know, for me, it was, I just thought about all the hard work I put in and just, you know, seeing and winning my last collegiate game, you know, cutting down the nets. It brought back a lot of great memories when I think about just the guys I played with, the coaching staff that was there, the fan base, the you know, just the, how they cheered me on, how they have shown me so much love over the years. You know, there were so many great thoughts, and it put so many smiles on my face, man. And just understanding, just like you said, being amongst greatness. When I started out at 18, not knowing, you know, 32 years later, man, I'm going into the Hall of Fame. I didn't think like that. I just love playing basketball.
Class act, great player, class on and off the court. It's nice catching up. Hopefully we can catch up down the road. I'm proud and happy for you. Not surprised. Proud and happy for you, man. Keep on doing what you're doing and stay around kids because you can help kids. And we need people who kids will listen to and have your knowledge to share. Trust me.
Thank you.
I mean that from here, dude. You know that.
I appreciate it.
Hey,
much
Tony,
love to you, man.
Love back at you, Tony. Have a great day. Keep smiling and text me. I'll send you the Nolan thing, but I want to know what vitamins you're taking. It's ridiculous. Yeah, 50. You look like you're 37 and in good shape.
I wish, man. Hey, just trying to do the right things in life. That's all I'm doing.
I'm trying too. Hey, I eat organic now. Seriously.
Big time.
I've been still doing yoga that I've been doing for about 35 years. I work out every single day and I still look this bad.
Hey, no, man. Hey, you know what? Yoga is something I need to incorporate into what I'm doing. That's my next plan.
You're not going to believe this, but you know, in this tone of voice, we kid around, but I wouldn't lie, right? I've been doing it half my life now.
Wow. Wow.
So okay. If I can do it, I can do it. And I'm a smidgen.
It's on.
You can do it. And it's okay. Helped me tremendously. Get into the breathing part, too.
Okay. Got it.
Tony. Mazel tov. Congratulations. Thanks for your time. I'm really happy for you and keep smiling, man.
Okay. Take care.
Back at you. See you.
All right.
Tony Delk, one of the all-time great people and basketball players. And notice now that Tony is old, I'm going to say people first. Can I do that?
Yeah, I think that tells you a lot about him. He looks like he could still go out and play.
I bet he can
just
still
seeing too. Him on Zoom, he looks like he could still play.
Does he look 50?
No.
Is there something wrong with my eyes? I'm going, he looks like mid-late 30s in great shape.
Yeah, I would have guessed 40 at the most.
Whew. You know, and he was one of those guys. I know we're late for a break, and Cameron's coming up next. So, Cameron, thank you for bearing with me. But he's one of those guys that would come right back at me. And it was kind of funny because he's a guy from a small town in Tennessee, but he became very comfortable with me quickly. And I was surprised how quickly he would throw jabs back at me. He's a kid from a small town in Tennessee, but for some reason he was very comfortable around me, and he was funny. And he's one of the few guys who would call me Cutler. The first time I did it, I kind of looked at him, and we just laughed. My respect for Tony as a person is off the charts. He just happens to be a super basketball player. And going into Hall of Fame, that's really, really, really cool. Terry Page. Not a very good. A great licensed massage therapist. 859-373-0578. 859-373-0578. Call her. Text her. Use my name. She's helped me tons. Terry Page, 859-373-0578 in Lexington. That was fun. TD, Tony Delk, one of the all-time greats. People and UK basketball players now in the Hall of Fame where he belongs. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN. An LM Communications broadcasting station. The only no-filter sports show in Kentucky. It's the Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
Welcome back. I got a no-filter and shame on the guy who hosts this show because it's been too long since we've had Cameron Drummond on the air like an hour later. So I apologize for Alan Cutler, Cameron. It's always good to have you on. I appreciate you having on, and I apologize for having you on late because of Tony Delk. So, and I know you understand, but even still, I'm really bad at keeping things on time. Jimmy will tell you that, but thanks for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, no worries. I'm doing good. And, you know, sometimes I find myself kind of like you. You know, I can go on telling a story or talking to someone for like 15, 20 minutes without even realizing it. So all good. I'm sure you did great stuff there on the air with Tony. And, yeah, excited to be back on, talk some Kentucky sports. I know everyone's probably hunkered down with the weather going out there today. So hopefully everyone's ready to sit back, relax, and just think about the Cats for a little bit.
So and I hope you take this with kindness. And at your point in your career, I actually think it's interesting that you're kind of like, and correct me, please, if I'm wrong, you're kind of like a jack of all trades. In other words, whatever is heavy or whatever is going on, they're plugging you into that hole and you can do this, that, the other, whatever. So you're like a general practitioner or something like that. So Because I see your byline, I never know. Well, how would I know what you're doing anyway? You know, it's not like you have a beat thing, but you're doing every different kind of story. So in the last 30 days, Cameron Drummond of the Lexington Herald Leader, who is the most interesting person you've talked to?
Well, that's a great question. Wow. I wasn't really prepared for that one. Honestly.
Wait a second. As you're thinking about it, you think I was prepared to ask you that?
No, absolutely not. Well, the thing about being, like you mentioned, like being kind of a general practitioner, you know, Swiss Army knife, jack of all trades, whatever.
And that's where I got the idea. As I'm talking, I went, oh, I wonder. Because to me, people are interesting, and we cover sports, but we really cover people. That was always my secret. I was a people person who loves sports. And I'm looking at you through Zoom, and I'm going, you know, you've gotten to dip your hand. And everybody wants to be a specialist, and I get that. But you've gotten to dip your hand into a lot of different waters. And so you get to meet a lot of different people where if you're a beat guy or gal, you're talking to a lot of the same people, which is fine, but it's different. Now, hopefully that explanation stalled long enough that you come up with a good answer.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, just thinking back on the last 30 days, I've done everything from Kentucky football and Kentucky basketball to I handle most of the soccer stuff for the newspaper for the Herald Leader as well. So a lot of stuff on Lexington Sporting Club, the new professional men's and women's team in town, the UK men's and women's programs. But it's funny, you know, you did a great job of stalling for me to actually think of an answer to your question. But actually, I think the most interesting person I've talked to in the last 30 days kind of goes back to more of that traditional beat reporting, focusing on one team kind of role. It's probably EKU football coach Walt Wells. just because he is a great guy with the media, is always willing to share anecdotes, tell some funny stories. And his team's in a really interesting position as well. Not only, you know, as they progress through the season, hopefully trying to make it back to the FCS playoffs for the second time in his tenure, but just also in the landscape of college football, this, you know, realignment news has kind of dominated things this week as well, as the Pac-12 is trying to take over, you know, teams from the MAC and teams from the Mountain West and things like that. And you look at EKU, a team that's kind of right on the fence of trying to make that FBS jump. Conferences are trying to snatch up teams. We have no clue what things like the portal and name, image, and likeness will do to shape the future of college football. So I think something like Walt Wells, you know, and someone like him who's open with the media, candid about those issues, especially for a team at EKU's level. And they've kind of found some water this year as well. They started 0-2, won their last two games. They're set to play Robert Morris tomorrow afternoon in Richmond to probably improve to 3-2. And yeah, he's a good guy, and I always enjoy my interactions with him, because you mentioned we cover sports, but we also cover humans and people as well.
Yeah.
And what Walt Wells gone through the last couple of years, I think he's got some really interesting human tidbits to share.
Yeah, he's done the show a couple times, and he's very descriptive, as you know, about how he almost died. And I'm sorry I can't remember his trainer's name with the AED machines, but if the AED machine wasn't down the hall, your memory will probably be better than mine. He coded like 7 or 8 times. He's alive now, and that would change anyone's attitude. But he's a really good dude, and the fact that he's 2-2, you know, they have to play, as you know, they have to play some games to just get a check, and hopefully your kids don't get too hurt and banged up because you got to play the rest of the year. And I expect him to win big at EKU. I don't know if he'll be there forever, but it wouldn't surprise me if eventually, sorry, EKU, if he ends up getting a job that pays a lot more. But I think he's a very kind, caring guy who gets it. And I think within the parameters of the budget that he's dealing with, and that's not a shot at EKU, which is what they're dealing with, the schools on that level, I think his kid's going to get a lot of good exposure. I like him a lot. I think EKU was lucky to have him, and he was lucky to get that job as a head coach. To me, that's a win-win deal. And it's interesting, of all the people that you could think of, I knew you'd have something eclectic, because I think you're a little eclectic, and I mean as a compliment, that was the answer that's taken. And I can't tell you every coach that they have at EKU. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to know, but I don't know who the tennis coach is. My apologies. I don't follow it. But, you know, EKU, when it comes to football and basketball you know, all their three, they've got some good coaches there.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to kind of further the point that I was trying to articulate about Walton in our interactions, I was over in Bowling Green for the Battle of the Bluegrass a couple of weeks ago when EKU was playing, you know, kind of one of those cut the check games against WKU. Wasn't particularly competitive, 31-0 win for WKU, who looked like a good football team in their own right. They may even go out and beat Boston College tomorrow afternoon. But, you know, just talking to Walt after the game, it's like me, him, and I think one other reporter. And it's just super laid back. It's not like these formal big press gatherings that are commonplace for Kentucky sports events. You know, you go to a Mark Stoops presser following a Kentucky football game, it's 50 people crammed into a small room at Kroger Field. You go to a Mark Pope or formerly John Calipari press conference at Rupp Arena, there's not even a room. We're doing it in a big open hallway space because to accommodate all the TV people, all the reporters, you know, print media, all that stuff. So it's really cool anytime you can interact with a coach or someone in that position in a more intimate setting. It turns into more of a conversation than a true question and answer thing. And they're always really appreciative as well. And something that Walt's always really gracious with
yeah. The
is thanking guys for covering EKU. You know, we appreciate the spotlight on the program, on the school. And that's things I like to do in my job as well. Because even when it's basketball season rolls around, yeah, 80% of my bread and butter is covering Kentucky basketball and Kentucky basketball recruiting. But I always like to carve out time to cover EKU and Morehead State and Western and any of the other kind of smaller programs around the state, because they have their own basketball history and tradition, and people care about that as well. And it's always nice to give them a spotlight just because everything kind of turns a little bit Kentucky dominated at times, especially in this market. Although for this year, I know that'll be for good reason with the, you know, reinvigorated fan base and juice that'll come with Mark Pope and Kenny Brooks taking over the women's program.
Yeah, and two wonderful people who I think will do a really, really good job. In the recruiting level, by the way, Roy Kidd was the same way. He was so easy to talk to. He would stand and talk to you forever. He knew what Kentucky was. They should have hired him a long time ago. I've told that story many times, neither here nor there. Somebody on the board said, he's not big time enough for us. He's been at EKU. And at the time, EKU had a better football team than UK, by the way. It's true. It's absolutely true. Neither here nor there. But on the recruiting trail, as you follow these kids and stuff like that, and I'm not backing down from what I said. There was only one. I immediately said I love to hire Mark Pope before others were doing it. Immediately. But I did say immediately that he had never recruited top 10, top 20 kids. And it's different in those homes. And I wanted to see if he could do that. And I said that more than once. I'm not going to back down from what the truth is. And what I didn't comprehend, my fault, was that his knowledge and his enthusiasm, doesn't matter whose home you're in. And I did think of that, but I wasn't sure because the top 25 kids can be different than a kid that's 150. The top 25 kid, as you know, as you're nodding your head, is a little different with expectations than the top 150 kids. But my area, which I'm not backing down, is a legitimate question, but I didn't, as much as I know Mark Pope is a great people person. I mean, Mark Pope is one of the best people persons I've ever met, and just happens to be now he's the head coach at the University of Kentucky, that I negated the people person that he is and the smart person that he is, and I should have thought one step ahead, nah, it wouldn't matter who the hell it is, he can recruit it. What kind of feel are you getting as you're talking to people that I don't talk to, getting recruiting stories, AAU coaches, those kinds of things, whether questions about him, could he recruit on this level with this immediate thing? Has he surprised people? I mean, what's the temperature in the recruiting circles? A lot of these people you can't quote that you're talking to. What feeling did you get when Pope was hired, and what do you get today?
Yeah, well, certainly I think yes and yes would be the answer to those questions. I mean, let's start with Mark Pope being hired. Obviously, the whole kind of circus that came with Calipari leaving, Scott Drew, Dan Hurley, you know, Billy Donovan, all the big names. There was probably a level of, you know, not even maybe cautious optimism of maybe even concern in Big Blue Nation just because of what Mark Pope had done before. Obviously, he had some good teams at Utah Valley and BYU, but this is a totally different stage. And from a recruiting perspective, a totally different recruiting, you know, landscape, type of player you need to be bringing to Kentucky, money at your disposal, you know, the expectation of what kind of player, what kind of recruit should be coming to UK. And obviously, I think that he has exceeded any UK fans' expectations for what recruiting has been like now that he's a couple months on the job. We start with the commitments. No other program in the country has 2 5-star commitments in the 2025 class right now. Kentucky's got 2 of them with Jasper Johnson and Malachi Moreno. Getting that first commitment from Malachi Moreno, having it come so early as well as almost like a table setting moment, something that wasn't dragged out until late October or November, something that was nipped right in the bud at the end of August, early September. I think that was big for Mark Pope. That gave a foundation that showed, hey, he's here to play. He's here to succeed in recruiting. Obviously, that's a kid from Georgetown and Great Crossing High School. So that's maybe a bit of an easier sell, but he still had to go out, you know, upset Indiana, upset Iowa, some of these other schools that were in hard for Malachi. Getting Jasper Johnson to commit earlier this month is an even bigger deal, not only because Jasper Johnson is the highest ranked recruit that Mark Pope has ever landed as a collegiate head coach, but also of kind of what it signals. This was a recruitment that Kentucky had to kind of roll up its sleeves and battle off some real blue bloods for. We're talking Alabama, we're talking North Carolina, Louisville to a certain extent, but really those two schools specifically. And those two schools specifically are deep pocketed schools. And you think particularly with what Nate Oates has done at Alabama in the last couple years, both in traditional high school recruiting and getting guys via the transfer portal. Like to fend off Alabama and North Carolina, that was a combined Mark Pope, the rest of his coaching staff, UK's NIL efforts, putting together a strong, significant package for Jasper Johnson. Not only doing that, but increasing what the initial offer was to what that final offer was. All of that stuff working in concert sends a strong message to other elite 2025, 26 recruits, the kind of caliber of player that Kentucky fans would be expecting someone who's the UK head coach to recruit. That tells me, hey, sorry, go ahead.
No, but let me ask you this question. Sure. Is there a question out there? There isn't in my mind. But is there a question out there? Look, Pope has done great. It just so happens this is a year and a cycle, which has changed because tons of years in the last 20, this wasn't true, and you know this, that there was not talent on this level to come to Kentucky. Is mm-hmm. there anything out there which now it's like he's checking things off people's lists and stuff like that? I can't imagine this thing bothers him at all. Well, but are you hearing this? Well, guess what? He nailed two Kentucky kids who are big-time players, but can he pick off the kid who's just as good in California? Can he pick off the kid that's just as good in Florida? Can he pick off the kid that's just as good in Indiana? Can he pick off the kid that's just as good in New York? Is that still out there? Or has Mark, who's done an amazing job getting these two youngsters to come here, and they will help recruit others, as you know all too well, is that totally gone, or is that question still out there, what you hear?
I don't think it's totally gone, but I think there's reasons for legitimate encouragement on that front. And two of the main reasons are Caleb Wilson and Akadin Lewis. Caleb Wilson is a five-star, do-everything type power forward coming out of the Atlanta area. He took an official visit to Kentucky earlier this month. It coincided with the weekend of the Georgia home football game. And by all indications, that was a tremendous visit. Kentucky trending in his recruitment. You know, he's got some other visits set up, but Kentucky absolutely knocked it out of the park with its true first five-star coming out of the Commonwealth visitor. Couldn't have gone better for Mark Pope, you know, over that recruiting weekend. Akadin Lewis is a standout guard, has a top four that's Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, and Connecticut. You know, that's as blue blood as it gets right there. And the fact that Kentucky is both trending for him as well and has a legitimate seat at the table to potentially land him, pair him with Jasper Johnson in the backcourt, potentially pair Caleb Wilson with Malachi Moreno, who's probably a bit more of a longer-term prospect in the front court, that tells me that Kentucky did enough right things not only in landing Moreno and Johnson, but in all the other things that go into those recruitments, the in-home visits, the, you know, getting players at ease with what this offensive system may be, the NIL stuff that I referenced earlier, that you have five-star guys who are outside of the Commonwealth who could be looking at any program in the country, and they are legitimately invested and seriously considering joining Mark Pope at Kentucky. They've got two more five-star visitors on campus this weekend, despite the weather in Lexington. Chris Cenac, who's a really stock-rising center out of New Orleans originally, and then Mikel Brown Jr., who's from the Florida area, and he's ranked as the best point guard in the 2025 class. It remains to be seen, because obviously recruiting is fluid. One kid commits, one kid cuts you from consideration. That opens the door, closes the door to another player. But Kentucky is getting a steady stream of top-tier five-star prospects to come on the campus. And by all indications so far, they've left with great, you know, interpretations of what Mark Pope can do for them at Kentucky, what Kentucky can do for them in terms of their longer-term development to the NBA. Now, the other thing I am hearing a lot is that a lot of kids want to see what this looks like for the first year. Obviously, none of us really know what a Mark Pope coached Kentucky team will look like. This year's team's got such a unique roster composition with seven guys who are going to run out of eligibility. Obviously, the three freshmen, with two of them being Kentucky natives. So a lot of kids are expressing optimism and seem to be legitimately interested in Mark Pope and have great things to say about him and the rest of the coaching staff. But they're also holding in the back of their head, like, all right, let's see this on the court. Let's see what that Champions Classic game against Duke looks like. You know, let's see how they do in an SEC season. Like, what does this physically look like? But all indications up to this point have shown that Mark Pope has been able to really take the recruiting bull by the horns, so to speak, at Kentucky, and has left just a really good impression on most people who he's pursued. And those are people, again, at the high four-star, five-star level.
I think when these kids see how Kentucky plays, it's going to help him recruit. You know, look, I don't think it's going to be that much different from what we saw at BYU. I think the only thing that'll be different is he got better athletes. He has guys that can jump a little higher. He has guys that are faster. He has more players. You know, and I think one of the things that will help because of his style, I think most of the people, the young people who are thinking, let me see this and stuff like that, I think they have a pretty good idea, but they do want to see it. And I don't blame them for that. If you're not a Kentucky boy, you want to see it. But I think one of the things that will help is when the sixth, seventh, and eighth guy, maybe the ninth guy as well, we'll see about 10, when the sixth, seventh, and eighth guy end up playing a lot of minutes and they see the pace, and then you're a freshman and you can say, well, even if I don't start, I can earn, notice I said earn 18 to 22 minutes, and that'll be plenty, whether they like it or not, unless they think they're going to the NBA, because he's going to have to meld transfers with freshmen, and that's going to be fascinating. If you get four, do you not take the fifth if he wants to come? That's going to be a sliding scale, whatever. But I see part of the foundation of this will always be some older players. Maybe I'll be wrong. I don't think this is going to ever be like Cal. And so I think that's actually going to help close the deal with maybe another player or two, and I could be way off.
Yeah, well, certainly. And I direct people to read a couple things that we got up on Kentucky.com and Kentucky.com/sportsnow. My colleagues Ben Roberts and Mark Story have kind of hit on this idea. Firstly, with Ben, you know, he was investigating some what the early practices have been like for Mark Pope. Obviously, they can go 20 hours a week now. And the most interesting thing to see, for me at least, for some of these early season games and exhibitions, is just the connectedness of the team. Because obviously the style of offensive basketball is kind of predicated on guys learning each other's different idiosyncrasies, reading and reacting on the court. Not a ton of set plays, just playing fast, playing efficiently. You know, we've heard the stories about Kentucky wanting to get the ball beyond half court within 3 seconds, you know, operating with something like a 14, 15 second shot clock, you know, rather than the 30 that they normally have. And that takes a lot of work, especially when you've got 12 scholarship guys who have never played together before, you know, a coaching staff, assistants and head coaches, aside from Pope and the offensive mastermind, Cody Feger, who have never coached together before. So a lot of interesting things go into this development. And so to see what that product looks like, and on the defensive end as well, you know, BYU was never really a standout defensive team under Pope, but they were, you know, serviceable, especially when paired with that high potent offense. And you think back to last year's Calipari team where, you know, Kentucky couldn't stop the ball to save their life. I think they finished 109th in KenPom in, you know, defensive efficiency. You know, Kentucky fans are probably yearning for a little bit more stability on that end. And that's everything from Amari Williams. How can you function as a rim protector? You know, Andrew Carr, the floor spacing big man formerly of Delaware and Wake Forest, and even some stuff like Kerr Creasa. I know a lot of people are excited to see the trash talking from him, but also some of the prolific offensive play. So just seeing how these practices, now that we're at the full ramp-up time, leading into things like Pro Day and Big Blue Madness and the Blue-White game, how all these guys come together, because I'm sure there will be some early growing pains, but just how much, you know, how well-adjusted, how well-connected they're able to be. And to the thing that Mark Story wrote, a column just kind of explaining the composition of the roster, Pope's gone old, Calipari went young. Recent evidence from basically every Final Four since COVID has told us that old teams win in college basketball. Teams, it doesn't even necessarily have to be heavy on transfer portal guys. It just has to be guys with experience. We're talking juniors, seniors, super seniors. And that's what this year's Kentucky roster has. And you even look at some of the younger guys, you know, in Otega Owe, Brandon Garrison, they may be on the younger end of the scale, but they still started in the Big 12, you know, the best conference in college basketball. So seeing how this experience, this newness all comes together throughout the first couple of weeks of true fall practice leading into some of these exhibitions and early season games will be really interesting. And, you know, leading up to that Champions Classic game against Cooper Flag and Duke in Atlanta in early November, I mean, that's going to be a pretty stern examination pretty early on in the Mark Pope tenure. So he's got a few weeks, you know, a little more than a month here to get all these guys on the same page. But because they come in with that experience, because they come in with a higher level of basketball acumen than a lot of Calipari's teams started off with, you know, maybe there's a little bit less work. Maybe Kentucky gels and looks a little bit better earlier in the season than some of those Calipari teams did.
See, I think there's a not hidden, but I don't think a lot of people see this, and I've said this before. I think one of the keys for this team meshing is the work that they're doing in recruiting, in judging, and I'm using that word on purpose, judging the personalities of the talent. That talent is one thing, and everybody wants talent. Let's not get silly here. But I think they're very cautious and careful to attempt to, everybody does try to do this, by the way, although Cal was more of a, we'll bring the talent in here, we'll figure it out and that kind of stuff. But he also, there were certain kids he didn't want, would never say publicly, you can't win recruiting. And why would you say anything negative? So it's not like Cal didn't do this too, but I think he's going to make it a, and has made it a huge priority of a feel. He's good with characters. Characters are good. Creasa is a character.
Yeah.
Having a feel as to personalities who will blend in together. And as long as that continues, I think that's going to be one of the quiet keys for his success, because you're at Kentucky. If you can't recruit talent, you suck. Seriously, you suck. This is Kentucky. Okay. But when you mold it into the people that he's bringing in, to me, that's going to be part of the secret sauce. I think it's a bigger part of the secret sauce than I think the public and the media has realized, Cameron.
Yeah, it's funny. I had someone tell me, I think during the offseason, right when we were getting the influx of press releases announcing that, you know, Lamont Butler had transferred from San Diego State, or that Jackson Robinson had decided to follow Pope from BYU. This was the, I had someone tell me that the press releases that came out with this, where it's kind of got, you know, normally they're canned quotes, right? Like normally it's like, coach said this guy will bring a winning attitude to the locker room and will help us on the court. Someone told me that these, the ones that Kentucky were putting out with Mark Pope's quotes, sounded like Mark Pope legitimately actually wrote them down, was intentional about what he was saying, giving like an actual response as to how they thought this player was going to help the team on and off the court. And I think that kind of speaks to what you're saying in terms of identifying characters, identifying the right blend of personality of someone that can help the team. Because I think the style of basketball, again, specifically on the offensive end, that Mark Pope and Cody Feger teams play is really, you know, it's predicated on understanding, on smart players, high basketball intelligence, guys who are able to read each other's movements on the court. You know, obviously floor spacing and three-point shooting is a key, but also the decision-making aspect, knowing when to take that shot, having the confidence to take that shot, you know, being willing to pass when you notice someone needs a touch or needs an open shot or things like that. So I think to your point, if this does go well, you know, and one of the big reasons towards this going well will be the makeup of Kentucky's roster, not just from a talent standpoint, because as you said, if you can't recruit talent to Kentucky, you probably shouldn't be in the seat, but getting guys who can marry that talent with understanding, with cohesion, and especially in this era of college basketball now, you know, while Mark Pope wasn't recruiting the biggest guys from the traditional high school ranks, you know, Colin Chandler aside at BYU, he made extensive work of the transfer portal, and he did very well at the transfer portal at BYU. Obviously, that's probably still a step or two down from the type of transfer portal player that he's targeting at Kentucky, but he showed a pretty healthy understanding of the types of guys to identify in that realm, bringing them into a very fast-paced system, getting quality results from them. And I'm sure it's not an accident that he identified those players for their characteristics, and they went on to have success with the Cougars. So this year, especially given the volume of transfer portal guys that Kentucky brought in, will be a very interesting assessment of some of the things that you just mentioned there, identifying the right type of person and player to come into this environment, and for hopefully for their sake, having it pay off with quality results from an individual and team perspective.
I say all the time, you know, we want good people around us, da-da-da-da-da-da. I think it's just part of his secret sauce. Cameron, I appreciate your time. If there's one thing that's going to happen over the next 2 months that we don't know, you know what that is in Kentucky sports?
I tell you if I know. Do you have any idea?
No, I have nothing. Nothing. Just threw it. Maybe you had some great prediction or something like that.
Tell me
how to read you, how to follow you on, sure. I still say Twitter, X, and what you're doing for the Herald and what you're covering, that kind of, give yourself a great plug.
Sure thing. So everything for Lexington Herald Leader sports content, Kentucky.com, Kentucky.com/sports. We got 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know how many reporters now, feverishly working to bring you guys the best and the brightest in Kentucky sports coverage. I'm over on X, Twitter, you know, whatever we're calling that, at CDRUMMOND97. And yeah, things are, you know, I don't have a good idea for any prediction here. I probably should just say Kentucky's going to beat Louisville in football because it happens every year. And every year I predict Louisville to win and it never happens. So maybe I'll say that this year, the power of the universe will change against me. I don't know. So how about this? If there's one thing I should tell people to look forward to in the next 2 months, it's whatever I pick for the Kentucky Louisville football game, pick the opposite. Head to your betting window of choice and just fade me, because I'm sure that'll happen.
That's a great tip. Cameron, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing, dude. Thank you so much, man.
All right. I appreciate it. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks. Cameron Drummond does a really good job as I call him a really positive jack of all trades. And he's getting to do a lot of stuff, and he does a really good job. I mean, you know, have an assignment, go at it. Blue Lotus Health, 859-533-0914, 859-533-0914, 859-533-0914. Jimmy, let's do this. Acupuncture. Ramon has helped me not a little, but tremendously, and all the different things he can do to help you out and how he's helped me. It's off the chart. Yes, there are 15, 20 needles in me and that kind of stuff, but it's helped with my knee, my back, all kinds of stuff. It's really been wonderful, the things he's been able to do for me, and I couldn't recommend him higher as a person and what he's doing. And And my understanding of acupuncture is getting better, but it's still something I need to learn a lot more. All I know is it works and it's beautiful and it really has helped. Okay, let's do this. We're going to go, and Jimmy, you'll give me an out time. You'll text me on that. If Brad is ready, let's do it. Brad.
We are here. We're here.
Brad Taylor. What's
we
up?
We are here. Not much. Safely getting through all the weather today, and we got bigger fish to fry, like trying to pick some winners this weekend. So
okay, so yeah, tell me. I'm sorry. Tell me about the Kentucky game, and tell me about Kentucky. How often they've been covering? This is a stat that you put out that John Clay picked up, and that I talked about earlier. That you know, winning and losing is nice. You're trying to cover your bets and win. Tell me about the Kentucky game coming up.
We've seen some very interesting moves here in the last 24 hours. This time yesterday and most of this week, Ole Miss was a 17.5 point favorite. Total 53.5 in that range. But now, as of this moment right now, the consensus line for the biggest books out there in the desert, 16 is now the Ole Miss favored line. And the total has come down to 52.5. So sharp money coming in here on Kentucky late. We see 60% of the tickets are on Ole Miss. That's the squares. But 63% of the sharp money is on Kentucky to cover this point spread. So
what does that mean to you when you're putting, if you're making a bet on this game?
It means the sharps are on Kentucky in this one. It means the late money is coming on Kentucky. You always like to kind of follow lines throughout the week. But as we get further in the week, you'll see sharper money come in later in the week. The squares like to get their money down early. But, yeah, the total here is kind of what I'm looking at because the total was at 53.5, now down to 52.5. And we talk about Lane Kiffin so far this year. You know he's an offensive juggernaut, right? Well, his games have gone under the total 3 out of his 4 games so far this year, despite the fact conventional wisdom, oh, they're putting up a lot of points. They are. But the desert knows this too. And they're acting accordingly. And Mark Stoops, the only system we really look to play with Mark Stoops in terms of when you see this situation, play it. True road games go under the total. 58 games he's done that over the years. He's 37-21 under the total in those games. That's very good. And that will make you some money. So I'm looking to play under the total in this game. But if you're looking to play Kentucky, yeah, now would be the time because the sharps have already come in. You're not getting the 17.5 you were getting. Now you're getting 16, some places 15.5. So I would act now if you're in the Big Blue Nation going for the Cats.
Brad Taylor, kind enough to join us. He takes over at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So you're telling me if Jimmy was smart enough to put $100,000 on the under, every time Stoops took the field with Kentucky, he would have made millions by now.
Yes, but I don't think Jimmy would be working at ESPN Radio if he could put $100,000 on every game.
That's correct.
Yeah, the return on investment there, I mean, it's a 23% return on investment, 37-21, 64%.
Oof.
So, yeah, it's 58. That's a good sample size. When you get people talk about, oh, well, they've won 6 out of their last 7 in this spot. Well, that's not enough for me. But when you get to 50 in football, basketball, yeah, that's enough to call it a system, not a trend. And over the years, we've seen enough data now from Stoops. This is a trend that I like to play. It's the only true system I will play with Stoops in Kentucky under in these spots. So I'm looking to play them. And as far as the point spread goes, it's Kentucky or nobody here. You're not getting the best of it, but there's no way I'm laying the points with Ole Miss. It's Kentucky or nobody.
Okay, so do you, when you have these numbers, just say, I don't give a blank who Kentucky's playing. You put $100 on the under every single week to see what happens? Because 37-21, how often do you find something that's that strong? That seems very, very, very strong to me.
It is strong. But also Lane Kiffin, in his days at Ole Miss, he has made you money going under the total as well, and you wouldn't think that. See, we all have these ideas about certain coaches, certain players, that they're, you know, big offensive numbers, big defensive numbers. But when you actually look at the numbers and see where the money goes, who cashes the tickets, sometimes it's very surprising. Kind of like we see Mike Gundy is the best coach in all of college football at cashing you tickets. Not Nick Saban, not any of these others. It's Mike Gundy. You wouldn't think that, but it's the numbers say that's who it is. But yeah, so you make money going under the total with both these coaches. That's why I'm looking to go under this total. And that's why you probably see this line dropping from 53.5 to 52.5.
So it doesn't matter that Ole Miss playing cupcakes, their scoring margin is almost 50 points a game. Means nothing.
The desert takes up for that. The desert knows this too. It's
sure
not
they
like, yeah, so they act accordingly. They change the lines accordingly. Those totals for all those cupcake games were in the 60s. Now the total is in the 50s for the first time this year. The desert knows what they're doing more than we do, Mr. Cutler. I'm sorry. They know a little more about this than you and I and all of us, all of us squares out here. They do this for a little bit more money, and they know more about this than we do.
Oh, let's put it this way. When it comes to gambling, I know nothing, so that's okay. Okay, really quick, tell us about your weekend shows.
Weekend, we're getting bunked for the UK pregame show tomorrow, but we will have our podcast because – being the Robin Hood of sports gambling here in Lexington, taking from the books and giving to the four squares like us. We'll have our podcast up on the website. It'll be on social media too. It's less than 10 minutes. It's literally, here's who we're taking today. Here's a couple of reasons why. Move on. Next game. That kind of thing. It's fast paced. But we'll have it up tomorrow for the Saturday games. And we'll be back on Sunday morning to get you ready for the NFL. On the Sunday, the weekend line at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. And of course, look for our podcast tomorrow as well.
Brad, as always, thank you, sir. Enjoy your show. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you. May the winners be yours, fellas.
I would like that. I don't bet, but I would like that. Jimmy, heck of a day. How about Brad Taylor with his knowledge of gambling, which is always really good. Cameron Drummond did a really nice job, Lexington Herald leader, and I'm very, 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 very biased towards Tony Delk because I covered him for years, and Tony is a Hall of Fame person and a Hall of Fame player. It is really that simple. Have yourself a great day, Jimmy. Thank you so much. Brad Taylor coming up next. Matthew and Jimmy, Monday at 10. I'll be back at noon. Have yourself a great day. Alan Cutler, count your blessings, and good luck with the bad weather wherever you are. I wish you nothing but the best, and I hope the rain stops all over the place. Not that we have a drought, but it stops all over the place so people can get back to doing what they need to do. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.